Good morning to all of you. I am Frank Vaughn, and it is June 15th, 2026. It's June 15th. There's 15 pounds less of me. A little bit more, actually, than there was. I think it's 17 pounds, close to 17, 16 and a half pounds less of me than there was on June 1st. I did stop for a few days, and I was eating protein because I thought it was necessary. Turns out it probably wasn't necessary, but I continue my journey. I have all the tools. I just have to use the tools. I've developed the tools over the last year and a half. I now know everything I need to do. And so I'm doing it. But Groundhog Day has, I don't want to call it ended, because it's not ended yet, but we have had movement. We have some kind of agreement. I refuse to use the word deal, although I probably will later. I'm so sick of the word deal. Everybody's using the word deal. And it just, I want to vomit every time I hear the word deal. But anyway, that's just a personal pet peeve. We have a memorandum of understanding that has apparently been signed. And we should probably wait until the text is released before we comment, but there's a few things we can say because J.D. Vance is already doing a media tour. Now, the first thing is, back when Mark Carney signed a memorandum of understanding with Alberta about a phantom pipeline, if you recall, I did a lot of coverage about that, saying how it had so many carbon credits and carbon nonsense in it that any oil that ended up in the phantom pipeline would probably be unaffordable by its quantity, whatever. I'm trying to make a play on unobtainium, but it didn't work out. I'm going to leave this mistake in. Anyway, it becomes unaffordable. And that the pipeline would never be built anyway. It's a memorandum of understanding. It's non-binding. Nobody has to do anything on either side. And so when I pointed that out, everybody was like, yeah, that's right. But now we have a memorandum of understanding between the United States and Iran. Doesn't appear, I mean, again, we got to wait for the text. Did Israel even sign this thing? Because the people in their government are saying a completely different thing from what the Americans are saying. So once again, I mean, we have to see how this actually plays out. We've had, as Tucker Carlson pointed out, 38, 39 different stories from Donald Trump over the last 2 months. I mean, if there's one thing that's come out of this, is that his credibility shot back and forth, back and forth. Anybody with a thinking mind now, and I've never been one of them. I always said over the last decade that if you want to know what Donald Trump is thinking, you have to listen to Donald Trump. You can't go to the media. You can't go to the interpreters. You have to listen. You got to tune into his rallies. And yes, you got to go through the rambling, but he says what he thinks in those things. And that's what you got to do. You got to listen to Trump to understand him. Well, listening to him doesn't work anymore because he says one thing in the morning, one thing at lunch, and one thing at dinner. And then sometimes at 1 a.m, he has a completely different story. So we have to interpret events. I'm not a sufferer of TDS. You know, the momentum that Trump built towards some different ideas was some of the best there's been. And now there's the hangover. Even if this peace becomes firm, I don't even want to call it peace. It seems the guns are silent today. But I wouldn't call it firm. But even if it does last, at least over the next 60 days, that's a good thing. Okay, let's start with the good news. I think that you can safely, for the next couple of months throughout the summer, live your life without the fear of a total warfare, Holocaust level event happening in the Middle East. I don't know for sure, but it seems the American, well, I know there's no seeming about it. The Americans needed out of this war. Trump needed out of this war. He thought it was going to be easy. It was actually quite hard. That's why he's agreed to what I think it's going to show and demonstrate to anybody that's thinking a strategic defeat of the United States. Now, it doesn't mean that the United States and Europe and other interests can't regain the ground lost through this strategic defeat. See, if I was Iran, I'd be watching very carefully all of this talk about a multinational fleet guaranteeing transit of the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. Because to me, that means they think they're going to manage the strait with Oman And they should, because it's territorial water. It's not an international waterway. It's like the Dardanelles. It's managed by the territory on either side of the strait. So it is totally within Iran and Oman's rights under international law to regulate traffic going through the strait. If the Europeans and the Americans want to put military in there, they want to put naval assets in there to guarantee transit, that could roll back significant gains that the Iranians have made in this war by basically holding the United States to a stalemate. Another empire goes to Persia and finds itself in trouble. Really interesting how these parallels span thousands of years in history. But this J.D. Vance is on this media tour. And he was asked today, I saw a clip, because as I sit here in starvation mode, I'm still consuming just as much news. And I thought it was very instructive. He was asked about a $300 billion development fund that Iran would have access to through the Gulf states. He didn't deny that that money was there. Now, here's the thing. I've covered on this channel how during the war, contingencies were developed for Gulf countries that were suffering massive economic damage, where the United States, as part of their deal, when it comes to the understanding, the strategic understanding of the petrodollar, that they would underwrite and help prop up the currencies of those individual Arab states and help them through printing money. They created mechanisms to do just that, essentially using the taxpayer, the American taxpayer, and the Federal Reserve as a backstop to print money and give it to the Gulf states. So I think what you're going to see here, no matter what, if it goes through the Gulf states, that's still going to be American dollars. Still going to be American dollars. The United States ultimately is going to be giving hundreds of billions of dollars to the Iranians. And they're going to say they're not. And that's why I also think J.D. Vance has been saying, you're going to hear Iranian hardliners spin this as a defeat. But don't believe them. Believe the president. Well, if we can believe the president, we were told we've had regime change. We haven't. But he says we've had regime change. The people who are leading Iran now are very different from the ones that we killed. Except they're not. They're literally not. The power players that are directly involved in these negotiations have been part of the Iranian regime this entire time and predate the war. And if the regime is gone, why is J.D. Vance warning us about the words of hardliners? I thought they were all dead. You see how this is? There's a big PR campaign in the United States to make this look good. But the fact is, the deal that was on the table before the war began, the day before the Americans and the Israelis bombed Iran in the middle of negotiations, the deal that was on the table was better and cheaper than the one now. And I said it at the time, it's never going to be cheaper. And now here we are. And again, we got to wait for the text. But it certainly looks like Iran accomplished a number of its strategic objectives, and the Americans are aware of it, and they want to do damage control. And now, if this thing holds or if it doesn't hold, because this is in doubt, I have serious doubts the Israelis are going to stop in Lebanon. And Iran has made that very clear that that's one of their red lines. The war in Lebanon must stop. I don't know how Netanyahu and the members of his cabinet can stop what they're doing in Lebanon politically and survive. Because the opposition in Israel is not an anti-war opposition. There are Zionists in the opposition camp that are criticizing Netanyahu's handling of this, and they want more. So there's pressure within the cabinet and pressure without the cabinet to continue this. And Netanyahu is political dead weight. He appears to have been abandoned by the president of the United States, which I view as a positive development. I mean, if Israel wants to go and conquer the Middle East, they could go conquer the Middle East. Do it on your own. Once again, I come back to Fortress North America, which isn't it ironic that now Doug Ford is using that language? That Mark Carney is using that language. Everybody's waking up at the same time. I was talking to a friend this morning a fellow that brought my attention to a series of commercials that were going around 6 months ago, 9 months ago, with Mike Myers and the elbows up idiots talking about how you can't buy American, you can't travel down there, you can't do anything anymore. And now they've moved on to artificial intelligence is the great enemy. And we're using this language that Canada and the United States are stronger together. When that implication, when you'd say something like that 6 months ago, well, you were evil. Well, now Ford's saying it. Now Carney's saying it. Because Canada needs the United States. Proximity dictates our need. And unfortunately, I don't think our position is stronger now in the wake of this war. You would think perhaps, you would think perhaps a strategic defeat in the Middle East would equal a compliant America. Hardly. They're going to come home and they're going to be looking for easy victories. And Canada's a big fat one, just waiting to be had. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes, because I think there's a lot of rhetoric at play. I don't really know. I in all honesty, I lean towards Carney and Trump to some degree coordinating, whether it's conscious, whether it's unconscious. This whole exit from the United States and the language of destroying our relationship does not make sense. That's not where Mark Carney's money is. That's not where his interests are. That's not what he's been doing his entire life. Meanwhile, Justin Trudeau, after screwing this country for 10 years, is now down there with his American girlfriend, drinking American beer, cheering the United States in sports. Like, what a profound condemnation of our system it is that that man gets to just go about enjoying his life with abandon. He left Canada to be with his American girlfriend. Isn't it just, after we were gaslit for suggesting that Justin Trudeau and Sophie had problems because she wasn't wearing her ring in public, we were told constantly by these liberal accounts online that he's a family man, he's the greatest guy, they're the greatest family, they're amazing, unassailable. Now look at them. He's running around acting like a teenager. What a midlife crisis. The man who suspended our Constitution, suspended our Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and was found by the courts to have illegally done so, is in the United States living the life of his dreams. And the government that he led is still in control of this country. And I'm told Canada is at the pinnacle of democracy and representation. It's just absolute trash. Reminds me of when Prince Charles reminded, not Prince Charles, he's now the king, reminded Donald Trump that he is the Canadian head of state. That's the reality. This is a monarchy, not a republic, not a democracy. It is a monarchy, a constitutional monarchy. And we are subjects without, we don't even have property rights. We don't have real rights. We don't have fundamental human rights, because if you can get rid of them and the guy who gets rid of them skates off into the sunset, you don't have anything. At any rate, I think Trump's going to come home if he can successfully extricate himself and he can manage Israel and he can manage this Middle Eastern problem. He's going to be coming home looking for some scalps. And there's a few laying around. There's Cuba. There's Canada. But the hangover, politically, Trump's in a lot of trouble. And the Strait of Hormuz, which traffic, it's going to be a while before the mines are cleared, before it's safe, before traffic is restored to normal. And then you have to restore and build up the strategic reserves that have been drained over the last several months in every country in the world. There is a physical oil shortfall that is in the economy that's already worked in that you have to make up for. You have to build the inventory back out. You have to turn the taps back on in Iraq and these places that have shuttered their capacity, which is why I don't think oil's not down 10 or 15 bucks on the news of an MOU. It's down $4. It's still much higher than it was at the start of the war. And part of that is the hangover. Even if the peace is lasting, even if the guns go silent, the hangover comes due over the next year. I've been saying this in my work, that the consequences of this will reverberate long after the guns go silent. So there's that. There's also the memory of what happened with Epstein. There's a lot of people in the United States that would still like to see some semblance of justice, and they remember the cover-up. And then we find out, too, that Donald Trump ordered the end of the investigation into the person who shot at him at Butler. That's weird. And you can go point by point. You can go through all these different things. The war being one of them that present a lot of political headwinds. It is now June 15th. The November election is less than 5 months away. I don't think that's enough time for the memory of the American public to fade, especially when they're going to continue paying high prices for gasoline and basics. They're still going to be dealing with inflation. The end of the war will not terminate that effect. And if they want to engage in massive money printing to underpin the economy, to smooth out the bumps, that will just be inflationary too. People are going to remember. And at the same time, if you read Zionist, it is Zionist. They're Americans. They sit in the Senate and they sit in Congress, but they're Zionists. The attacks are already starting from within the Republican Party, from within that neocon wing. Trump didn't go far enough. So he's driven a lot of MAGA away. He has not prosecuted the war in Iran to its finish the way that the neocons and the Zionists would like. He's lost his credibility by flip-flopping all over the place, which I think is a tragedy. It's hard to recover from that. And there's all these other issues. There's all these other headwinds heading into November. And the Democrats might be a mess. You can say that. But they don't have to be cohesive. The midterms are not about picking a direction. The midterms are a judgment call on the current direction of the country. Every Atlas Intel, Rasmussen, every single reliable polling house that you can look at has got the Republicans underwater and has this president underwater by double digits with a 2 as the first digit in the 20s underwater in terms of favorables. It is bad. I don't know if more war can make it better. I don't know if an invasion of Cuba can make it better. I don't know if annexing, having an Anschluss with Canada can make it better. And my real concern is that what I would call the very good things about the Trump agenda they're on the ropes. They're at risk of never being implemented or carried through to the finish line, because if the election is lost in November, that's the end of the presidency. He might still effectively be president, but it's going to be bogged down. Nothing will get done. And I think that's a tragedy, because I think before the Iran war started, he might have been able to manage the Epstein thing. Maybe. A lot of people are pretty upset about that, me being one of them. But it's a terrible thing when it comes to voting for your pocketbook and your personal finances versus voting for justice for thousands of minors who have been victimized. People will vote for their pocketbook just about every time. I think I'm the only one stupid enough to constantly make moral decisions that undermine my financial viability. But I like it better this way. At any rate, I think the best possible outcome is the one where the United States exits, the one where the United States cuts Israel off, says that, hey, if you want to keep fighting in the Middle East, you go ahead. Maybe we'll sell you some bombs. But we're not going to defend you anymore. We're not going to militarily back you up. We're not going to be your backstop. The tail will no longer wag the dog. And if we wanted to actually be moral and just, truly, if we wanted to be moral and just, with 1.2 million people displaced in Lebanon, that's a lot of people, with the leveling of Gaza, with the continued targeted assassination of civilians, I mean, the IDF is doing horrible things. Anybody that denies that denies reality. They're doing horrible things. They're ethnically cleansing both Gaza and Lebanon, and it's very close. I think it is an ethnic cleansing, actually, now that I'm making that decision now, that the West Bank is being ethnically cleansed, because every single day in honest media, there is coverage about what the settlers are doing in the West Bank. The West Bank, where there hasn't been terrorist attacks, they've been coming from Gaza and other places. The West Bank, where settlers are going in, beating Palestinians, burning down their houses, Christians are getting killed. Israel should be sanctioned. They should be treated the way that Iran is until they get their house in order. If we're going to be involved at all. If we're not going to be involved, fine. Wager ethnic war. Take as much territory as you want. But that nation of 9 million is on its own. You have to do it by yourself. We have problems over in North America I would really like to focus on. The Middle East is not our problem. We don't need those problems. We don't need the baggage of thousands of years of ethnic and religious conflict when we got enough problems of our own right here. So I'm not going to say much more about it today. I want to see the text. I think we're going to be able to do a point-by-point comparison of the JCPOA and this new agreement, which is not really an agreement. The JCPOA was binding. A memorandum of understanding is not binding. And if the best thing that the U.S. administration can come out of this war saying is that Iran will never have a nuclear weapon, well, that's what you had before the war began. They agreed to it with American inspectors on the ground verifying it. But you just had to go to war and try and do regime change nice and quick, just like you did in Venezuela, which, by the way, that's not even working out well. Public opinion, when Maduro was first taken out, was very favorably disposed towards the Trump administration in Venezuela, is now decidedly turning against the Trump administration and the United States, because nothing is getting better for the Venezuelan people because they left the Maduro regime intact. The only thing that's changed is the Venezuelan government is cooperating with U.S. demands vis-a-vis their oil. When the administration changes, it's like riding a tiger, man. Eventually, you got to get off. When the administration changes or it gets bogged down, the Venezuelans will throw the yoke off. That Venezuelan regime, I shouldn't even say the Venezuelans, the Venezuelan regime that still has all the guns and still controls the country, still represses its people, will throw the American yoke off and do whatever the hell they want anyway. I think domestically, the Trump administration had a really solid plan. I think their foreign policy is an absolute disaster so far, but that doesn't mean it's not worse for Canada, because it is. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that a lot. I'm Frank Vaughn. The fast continues. God bless you all, even those of you who don't believe in a creator. I'll see you soon.